Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello once again and welcome back to Pot on the Tyne Match Day. My name's Taylor Payne and it's a big old trip to the South Coast today for Eddie Howe's men. It's also a big old trip for our intrepid reporter George Colgan, who's currently on the South Coast. Chris Woff, on the other hand, is of course sat comfortably on Tyneside, currently no doubt tucking into his second breakfast of the morning. Honestly, the sheer gall of that lad. Let's pick things up with George.
Oh, I do love to be beside the seaside. Oh, I do love to be beside the sea. Oh, I do love to be beside the prom, 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 when the brass band plays tiddly um pom pom. I got some of those lyrics wrong, but no matter. It is Sunday, it's Bournemouth, and that means only one thing. It means a caulking on the coast. We will say no more about that. So here I am. It's a couple of hours before kickoff. It's 60-something hours since Newcastle were last in action in that Champions League game against Barcelona. And I just think this is a fascinating academic test. That's not something that I would normally think about, but with the way Newcastle have refashioned their squad this season, with the greater strength and depth they have now, there's an opportunity to mix things up, to change the team around, and see whether psychologically they can cope with moving from one competition to another and then on to another, obviously with Bradford in the League Cup this coming week. Some changes will have to be made to Eddie Howe's team. We know that. There are a few injuries, but there's an opportunity there too. And it does take me back to 2 years ago. I was, of course, at the Vitality Stadium then to see Newcastle play a few days after they'd lost 2-0 at Borussia Dortmund. And they came into this game with 11 senior players missing through injury or suspension. It was very ragged. It was very tired. Newcastle's squad was stretched to translucency and it ended with a 2-0 defeat and Kieran Trippier having a bit of a ding-dong with a fan. He was saying, where's the effect of, can you not see we're trying, can you not see how many injuries we have? And it was a very kind of disappointing day when Eddie Howe's squad was just, yeah, absolutely stretched and stretched to its, beyond its limit, really. It's very different now. I think Newcastle are in need of a positive result. This is not a happy hunting ground for them since Eddie Howe's been head coach. He's back at a club he knows very well. But I do think this is really interesting. Can they bounce back? Can they rebound? Can they make changes? Yes, some necessary, but also for the sake of it, to use this squad, which is now much deeper, much stronger, which has some real quality in it. And can they sort of do it in a seamless sense going from one competition to another? I think it's really fascinating. Let's see what happens.
Brooks gets it back from Tavernier. Great run from the Welshman. And Adams to strike! Oh, very calmly done by Nick Pope. Just nonchalantly kicked that away. Hit with some venom. Tonali looking to give it back to Murphy. Petrovic called into action. Wouldn't fall for Voltimada. It's Tavernier. Wanted on that left side. He's got it through to Evan Nielsen. Brooks! Flag goes up. Well, it was beautifully worked by Bournemouth. But the referee's assistant raised the flag instantly and Brooks is denied. Oh, and the ricochet is awkward for Sven Botman, who hacks it away.
Tonali's hands very much within his body shape, protecting himself. I think it's fair to say that wasn't a penalty. Everyone involved in football will be happy with that one.
Voltimada, Tonali, Livramento, Voltimada goes over under the challenge of Diakite. VAR has backed up the referee's call. That was not subtle from Chow, who's already been booked. Bournemouth fans baying for a second yellow card there. An expectant hush descends around the Vitality. Kluivert! Pope with the save.
Greetings to you on the South Coast, George, a place that you like going to a lot. I mean, I think I've broken you there quite a few times. I was just thinking back earlier and look back at the time when I suggested to you that you should write about Joe Linton playing in a different position, and you replied to me basically saying that you were going to write about Eddie Howe and his connection with Newcastle and Bournemouth, and then you were just going to get on with it. And it turned out, I think you had COVID, didn't you? If that was one of the many times.
I had terrible COVID. I kept saying to you, look, I'm just going to get in and out as quickly as possible. And eventually you stopped communicating with me. Yes, I mean, to say that I've had worse experiences at Bournemouth, I think probably puts my experiences at Bournemouth in some kind of context. I mean, I definitely have, because I've seen Newcastle absolutely stink the place out in very difficult circumstances, but I'm yet to have fun there. I think that's fair to say. That is not a game that is going to live in my memory for very long, except just in a general Bournemouth South Coast pain kind of way, which I've had plenty of. So thank you yet again, Chris, for allowing me to share this beautiful moment with all those Newcastle fans who made the long journey down. Good grief. What a long journey for that.
Yeah, it wasn't even warm, was it? Either.
It was chilly. Is this how bad things are, that we're already getting onto the weather?
Let's talk about the before we get onto the action or lack thereof. The big talking point before the match, we spoke about this in the back end of the Barcelona podcast, was that the fact that we expected there to be changes. I'd spoken to people in the coaching staff, and they basically said we're going to be making significant changes, because they spoke about Bournemouth being a physical test more than a footballing test in some ways, and that wasn't being disrespectful to Bournemouth, but Bournemouth play like Newcastle in many ways. They're a high intensity, they are a physical athletic side. But I was shocked, I think, by the volume of changes, which was seven. I mean, Eddie Howe, across the first five games of the season in all competitions, had made a cumulative nine changes across those games, and they make seven for this one. Now, one of them was enforced in Fabian Schär, and obviously he couldn't play Anthony Gordon. But beyond that, he's actually made these changes, and he has rotated the pack 64 hours between Barcelona finishing and Bournemouth starting, so you understand why he did. But were you shocked by how many there were?
Well, I mean, it was the thing that I was kind of almost most interested in, you know, that thing of how you take on this challenge of four competitions, the high of Barcelona. I mean, you worked out the stats from the last time Newcastle won the Champions League, that he made an average of 1.8 changes going from a European match into a Premier League match. And a lot of that was enforced, of course, because, you know, as the season went on, Newcastle had that horrible list of injuries and suspensions, and they also had a smaller squad, and now they've got a big squad.
And yeah, I mean, just briefly, to jump in and a little bit contextualize that. The first match, actually, after a European game in 2023-24, Howe did make four changes, yeah. And that's, as you say, before the squad started to bite. So I worked out that stat, but you have to contextualize it. And that was actually, they went there and won 8-0 at Sheffield United as well. So those changes actually bore fruit at that point.
And I don't think I don't think this comes naturally to Eddie Howe. And I don't mean that in a sort of disrespectful sense, but, you know, he's not used to playing in Europe. And I think when you look at Newcastle's great run of fixtures last season around sort of Christmas, New Year, doesn't want to change the team. And I think that's his kind of starting point. But now with the squad that Newcastle have, that is, you know, that's a luxury that he possesses now, that he can change things around. And he's got players who need games. And so, yeah, I was quite surprised to see that many changes. But at the same time, the other part of that equation was to see whether the players who came in could play with the same sort of industry, with the same sort of endeavour as the people that they replaced, whether they could translate, you know, that sort of... I mean, it wasn't anything like the same performance as it was against Barcelona, but it was on a kind of level with Elland Road and Leeds, you know, not just the formation, but the kind of way Newcastle took it on. I mean, that's another...
I mean, just briefly before we get on to how they took it on, I mean, just to quickly run through some of this, so the main talking points in the side. I mean, I've mentioned before about Fabian Scher being absent, obviously Anthony Gordon comes out. The four players did retain their place, and that was Nick Pope, Tino Livramento, Dan Burn, Sandro Tonali, who have started every single game this season, which I think says a lot about who are the central cogs of this side now. Joe Willock came in, Lewis Miley making their first starts of the season, Malik Chow, his full debut, Lewis Hall's first time he was in a starting 11 in a competitive match since he broke his foot against Liverpool on February 26th. So that was significant in terms of those changes there. But I mean, the big one was that Bruno Guimaraes, for the first time, me having written this week about how he always plays, after 68 straight top flight starts for Newcastle, a Newcastle record for an outfield player in the Premier League era, it was the first time in 680 days he was left on the bench. And I mean, Newcastle hadn't won any of the previous eight matches when he hadn't been in the starting 11, and that's because he has been so key to it. But obviously, he travelled with Brazil, he played at high altitude in Bolivia, he then started last weekend, he then started on Thursday, and Howe spoke before the game about that sort of physical test for Bruno. So it was massive, because Bruno Guimaraes always starts, and yet this shows how much the rotation is adding into everything that Howe has to think about, and that he has to protect these players, because Bruno is so important that he will eventually break down if he just keeps playing all of these matches. And so Howe has to pick and choose where possible. And so this physical test, the fact that him and Joe Linton also stayed on the bench for the entire game, I thought was interesting in that regard. Two huge players, but obviously Eddie Howe decided that this was one physical test too far for them, really.
Yeah, and you can also make arguments about whether it paid off or not. I mean, I'm just not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure where I kind of stand. I asked Howe about that afterwards.
Tough game here, I think it always is. I think Andoni's got Bournemouth playing a really strong style of football, which is difficult to play against. I thought we defended very well today. I think much better than we have done against Bournemouth in recent games. I think we limited them really to long shots. I think Nick's made a couple of important saves, but ones that I'd probably expect him to make, although it's never easy to do. So our defensive performance was really strong. I think we struggled to create chances today. That's a natural disappointment. Our plan was to try and win the game with our plan, but it wasn't to be. But I think it's a really strange occurrence. There's 3-0 away from home for us, which is really uncommon with our attacking style. Just naturally, I think we're going to be a different team attacking-wise this year without Alex. I think that's not why I think we've not scored in the three away games, but naturally I think we'll be attacking with a different emphasis. I thought Nick played really well today. I thought he was very, very effective with his footwork and his link play, but we just need to know and get used to him and his style more and get more runners off him, because he's very, very good in that respect. So I'm hopeful we're evolving to a different team, hopefully a better team. That's, of course, the plan, but it may take a bit of time.
Four clean sheets out of five so far this season in the Premier League. I mean, that's pretty incredible, and it's giving the team a brilliant foundation in matches. And of course, I think as a starting point, you have to say that an away point is a good result, and you know, particularly against Bournemouth, who've had their best ever start to a season in the Premier League, and you know, are a good team, physical team, as you said. But they're not at the moment capable of making the most of that foundation. They're not creating chances. Their XG was very, very low in this game. Sorry to bring up XG, but you know, I'm very much a stat head, as you know. You know, they're operating in this post Alexander Isak world. I thought that was kind of very interesting, and it's something I've not kind of quite perhaps thought of in these terms before. That how, you know, actually brought up Isak, you know, nobody else mentioned him. I'm sure, like all of us, you know, fans want to move on, he's gone. But how do Newcastle transition into this post-Isak world? And it does going to mean, I think, you know, perhaps more than I'd considered, it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of work, and it's going to take a bit of time. You know, it's not just about adapting to Nick Voltamada, it's also going to be about the whole makeup of the team changing. I think that's becoming increasingly obvious.
Yeah, I mean, so you started to briefly touch upon how Newcastle played, and it was very much a 5-4-1 off the ball. So like at Leeds, he shifted to a three-man defence. Sven Botman was in the middle of it, Dan Byrne, left-sided centre-back, Malik Chow, right-sided centre-back, and then Livermendo was right wing-back, and you had Lewis Hall left wing. You then had a midfield two, essentially, of Tonali and Lewis Miley, and then Willock and Jacob Murphy just off Voltamada. Now, in terms of defensively and off the balls, you say, I think certainly early on, it was to try and nullify Bournemouth. They expected Bournemouth to come at them quickly and aerially and to try and be direct as they are. And I think at least partly the idea was to stay in the game to begin with. Do you think that's a fair assessment of what maybe the initial game plan was?
Yeah, I do think that's a fair assessment. And I think it was a case of two sides cancelling each other out, because I don't think Bournemouth were great. They, you know, Newcastle defended well, defended rigorously, but it's not as if Nick Pope was given, you know, a huge amount of things to do. And so I think that becomes part of it, that the two teams were kind of negating each other. But I think that was probably the mindset, that they knew, again, as you pointed out, that Bournemouth are very well equipped at taking advantage of weaknesses, of seeing fragility, and, you know, putting their kind of foot on the throat. They did that a couple of years ago. They're very, very good at doing it. They're, you know, I'm not trying to downplay their sort of talent, their skill, but they're just very, very good at doing that sort of stuff, the taking advantage stuff. And it probably was a setup like that, that, you know, like, here we are, we're going to freshen everything up. We're going to make sure that whatever happens, it's, you know, we're not going to be beaten. Physicality, bring in all that freshness. And yeah, I mean, I think to a certain extent that paid dividends, but it wasn't fun to watch.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds, or Skims. Sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
In the first half, Newcastle's, well, I was going to say in the first half, their one big chance of the game really came in the 11th minute, and Murphy at the near post, it was sort of Tonali and Murphy combined down the right, and then he was played in the area by Tonali. It was a sort of, it was close in, but it was from quite a tight angle. He shot straight at Petrovic and he saved at the other end. A few minutes later, Brooks had the ball in the net after Evan Nielsen played him in. It looked like he was just off. The semi-automated offside showed that Malik Chow just got it right, but and they'd been given offside on the field, and then VAR confirmed it. But I mean, it was basically the only goalmouth action, direct goalmouth action for either team in the first half. Really.
Yeah, can I sort of make an adjacent point, but like not too long ago, there were complaints aimed at how and the coaching stuff. It's like, well, there's only one way of playing, you know, like if it doesn't work, what do they do next? We're actually, you know, it's not just in terms of the personnel change that we've seen today, the size of the squad, but we are seeing in these matches different styles, the three at the back again at Elland Road, and indeed today, it's like you're sort of thinking, oh my God, but like if they just press like they did against Barcelona, you know, in that first 15, 20 minutes, they could have blown Bournemouth away. And so, you know, I'm sort of making the point that as a fan, as someone who watches the team, you sort of want to have your cake and eat it. He's changing things as we're watching, changing formations, changing styles to adapt to the circumstances and adapt to the opposition. I think it's taking me some getting used to, but
I think you can also critique that, because I think that you could say that the game plan in the end didn't work against Barcelona. Barcelona are one of the best three sides in Europe probably, so that's fair enough. And then you can say in the end the game plan worked defensively against Bournemouth, but you probably couldn't do what you did against Barcelona on the Sunday. So you pick one or the other, and he's picked to do it against Barcelona. Yeah. And I'm not having to go to do that.
It's fascinating It's fascinating.
It is, because on this very point, I had a discussion with my dad this morning about Voldemort, and it might have been yesterday anyway, about not starting against Barcelona, and Sim sort of saying if they'd had centre forward of the pitch, that they may well have scored, and they may well have done. But I also think A, the game would have been different against Barcelona if he'd played, and B, that would have meant that Voldemort probably wouldn't have started against Bournemouth, and now they're in this position because unfortunately Juan Wissa is out injured, and if not, it wouldn't be that you wouldn't have to select to not play an out-and-out number nine, but he's also had to sort of pick and choose in that regard. And I mean, in hindsight, you can look at it and say, was today the right occasion for Nick Voldemort to be up front? He was kind of a frustrated figure at times. In the first half, he only touched the ball once in the opposition penalty area. I thought that at times Bournemouth looked to, if Bulliam's a bit strong, they certainly were physical with the centre-halves, trying to box around him, trying to give him very little space. And Newcastle didn't get close to him enough, really. And that's, again, also the rest of his teammates having to learn on the job as to how he plays. He has to learn how they play, and sort of getting close to one another. I think him and Murphy actually have struck up a relatively good partnership in a short space of time in terms of understanding one another. But maybe he's not in the sort of wider field, particularly in the side, which has changed so much. But I mean, what did you make of him and sort of how Newcastle tried to find him or failed to find him, I suppose, in some ways?
Well, it just felt to me like he was isolated so much of the time. And of course, if you're playing a version of 5-4-1, you know, you're asking a lot of that lone centre forward. You're asking him to hold the ball up. you know, you're asking him to be the link player. What he wants to do is drop deep a lot of the time, and I'm not sure how often, you know, how often that worked. Howe was full of praise for him afterwards. Said, you know, he thought his performance was really good, but you know, you're asking someone to feed on scraps. There were very few touches in the Bournemouth box, and you know, there was no shot on target from anybody in the second half. So, you know, if you're evaluating him on the thing that he's kind of paid to do, the thing that he's judged on, I thought it was a tough day. But again,
I don't know how much of you got to see sort of body language of replays, but there's a couple of times where Malik Chow tried to play the ball to him and a couple of midfielders tried to play the ball to him, and he could see he was gesturing afterwards that he wanted it in
the
a
ball
different
to
place.
His feet. That, yeah, like
yeah,
he wanted
it to his feet rather than behind, yeah.
Yeah. And so again, you know, you're asking the team to sort of change. You're asking, I think, you know, in a game like that, you're asking him to change, and so it becomes kind of very difficult. And you know, this is one of the feelings that the coaching staff had right from the start, that they wanted to ease him in, they wanted to integrate him slowly, that his style, his physical skill set was going to take a lot of getting used to, and it was going to involve the team changing a lot, and that if you'd had Wissa around, you know, a more sort of recognisable centre-forward player, that would have made life a lot easier for them. But of course, he's not there. I mean, it's a work in progress. It's going to be fascinating to see how it works, but people are going to have to be patient because he's just such a different player to the man he's effectively replaced.
So the penalty shout came in the 52nd minute, and it was one of the few times Newcastle actually got the ball really into the box, and that's what I think was a frustration as well, is that you've got Voldemort, he's just gone. We know he's not coming as a sort of stereotypical target man, but he did score a header last weekend, and really Newcastle didn't get, or quite often they'd get to the byline and cut back rather than get the ball in the box, but Livramento did cross it. And Voldemort, facing away from goal, takes a wonderful touch to bring it down. And yep, then he's sort of pulled back by Diakite, who definitely has a hold of his shirt, definitely tugs him. I mean, Voldemort goes down fairly easily. His sort of legs fall from underneath him. But it's, I think, that, I mean, you in the press conference, it seems Howe was adamant it was a penalty, was he?
He was, with the caveat of not having seen it back. He said, I might change my mind having seen it back. I thought at the time, with the naked eye, oh yeah, that's a penalty. You then watch it back. There's an absolute, undoubted, unquestioned tug on his shirt. He's pulled, but then his legs give way, as you point out. And, you know, there is a theatricality in that, which I didn't sort of really like a great deal. And again, it's definitely there. The tug is there. I think it would have been a soft penalty in the sense that you just see that sort of tugging, shirt tugging all the time. And it didn't justify his legs going. So if it had been given, naturally, from a Newcastle perspective, I would have been delighted. I find it difficult to argue with the fact it wasn't overturned. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a one where if it's given on the field, it shouldn't be overturned, and if it isn't, then it's the same way around. Yeah. I think it's almost like a referee's call. I think he does definitely pull him, but I also thought he went down fairly easy. Howe's explanation was also he's definitely going to get a shot away. I'm not entirely convinced he was in the correct body position to do that,
no.
But he was in the penalty area and he wasn't in a good position. I mean, then second half, we've said about the way that Newcastle started, the assumption was that at some point Howe was going to sort of go for it. And I suppose in the 62nd minute, he brings on Harvey Barnes and Anthony Elanga to be left on the bench. He takes off Murphy, takes off Willock. And that is sort of, you think, oh, he has directness to a degree in Barnes. Yeah, he has Elanga's pace. And I mean, nothing really changed, did it? I mean, it wasn't even just for Newcastle, but basically there was a very few chances. Newcastle didn't have a shot in the second half.
No.
Which felt staggering in some way. I mean, not in the sense that that's 180 minutes of football played across three and a bit days, essentially, but in the sense that you just thought more was going to come after the way they started. Malik Chow probably lucky not to get sent off for a second yellow. He took out Ryan Christie, having already been booked, and really probably should have gone. I thought beyond that, I thought he was all right. I thought the defence did well physically, though you could see they wanted height there as well to deal with Bournemouth being direct, but there was that moment. And then right in at the end of the game, Nick Pope makes a big save from Patrick Clivert. I'm rewinding 20 odd years here. No, Justin Clivert, free kick. Justin Clivert, who scored his hat trick against Newcastle at St James's early in the year, but he had a He had the free kick, and really that was the only real goal mouth action in the second half. Yeah, we just didn't. They just you always thought the game was going to get better, and it just really did it, George.
No, I mean, you know, and I think we've spoken about this in living memory with Newcastle when, you know, in those rare moments, you know, think about the Aston Villa match that started the season. That was a couple of years ago, wasn't it? And it was like, oh my God, they can actually get stronger. Here they are with, you know, with these kind of resources. They do have that now. It's yet to sort of affect games. I mean, I think that will come. Again, it's still a novelty to look at a bench like today's and think, oh, you know, they can really bring on options that will have an impact. They're still kind of working each other out. They're still working themselves out.
Well, there was an interesting stat I saw after the game, which is that this is Newcastle's youngest starting 11, 25 years, 349 days in the Premier League since October 2019 against Wolves. So basically, since the very early Steve Bruce era, Newcastle have largely been an ageing side. Yeah, they've brought in these changes, these players over the summer, and a lot of them have come into the side today and rotated. And actually, you can see that's the sort of youth policy and a lot of the transfers starting to come through into the starting 11. So that was interesting. It wasn't something I necessarily recognised. But
no, but I also think that happens when you take out, you know, you take out a Cher and you bring in a Miley. How often that's going to happen over the course of the season, I'm not sure. But like longer term, it's what they needed to do. That, you know, yeah, they've had an old team, they've had an older squad, and the fact is that they're bringing in younger players. Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of interesting context. That if I'm looking for positives, I don't think it's an afternoon where you're sort of groping for positives. But I think the fact is that they have kept clean sheets. The fact is that they are picking up points away from home, and that is incredibly valuable.
Before you stress the positive, I want to flip it first. I want to go there now and let's finish the positive. The negative is that they are winless away from home. Now they're also undefeated away from home, but they're winless and goalless away from home. Only Villa and Wolves have managed fewer than Newcastle's three league goals this season. They failed to score in three of the five games, and they're averaging less than one XG per match.
You're desperate for me to start crying, aren't you? Because I'm in Bournemouth. And you want me to cry.
You asked me to look up these stats and XG in an individual match under Howe. This was the second lowest in a Premier League match under Howe of 0.14. The lowest was last season at Crystal Palace. Tonali's first game as he starts at number six in the league when it was 0.04. But yeah, their shots volume wise, it was the sixth lowest during the Howe era. For Newcastle, it was also shots on target wise, the fifth lowest. So that just shows that in attack, or at least on the ball, it's just not quite happening for them yet, as we've already discussed, really.
Yeah, it isn't. They're not clicking. Work in progress is, putting it mildly, there's a long way to go. And yet, I'm not feeling sort of hopeless about it when you've got the players that they've got. When you've got the players they have in reserve, you know, there's more to come. I'm now trying to spin your negative into a positive, but it's also kind of the way that I'm feeling. I mean, I do feel that, like, this was a long way to come to watch that. But it's not sort of wholly without merit, because for as much as they didn't threaten, I also don't think that they were threatened themselves. There is definitely a platform there.
It was the lowest combined XG in a Premier League game this season, back to XG. Just 15 shots and a combined XG of 0.69. But then, I mean, so to flip it and to say the positive, we've mentioned already, four clean sheets in five Premier League games, three of them away from home, only three goals conceded, all of which were against Liverpool. So Newcastle kept the most clean sheets in the league this season. No side has conceded fewer goals, I think, now after Arsenal. I don't know what the exact score is, but they're 1-0 down before. The joint most in Newcastle's Premier League top flight history, alongside 1900-01 and also 1922-23. So, I mean, this is really historic. I mean, it's even better than this team started in 2022-23 when they had it ended the season with the joint meanest defence in the league. So they are really stifling opposition sides. It's not that they're just getting away with it. In terms of actual quality of chances, you look at it and say that the teams aren't getting clear-cut opportunities. It wasn't really that beyond the goal that was disallowed correctly and beyond Clivert shooting from distance, there were very few times, if any, that Bournemouth actually looked like scoring today.
Yeah, and I think there's also a kind of context, isn't there? It's like if we just look at it in terms of those stats or the negative stats, it's pretty stark. But if you think about how they played at Aston Villa, if you think about how they played against Liverpool, if you think about how they started against Barcelona, you know, there is clearly attacking threat there. There was clearly promise there. Now, in those early games this season, they were taking to the pitch without a recognised centre-forward. And now they've got a centre-forward that they're trying to sort of adapt to. That takes time. It's not that this season has only seen Newcastle defend or sit back behind the, you know, sit back behind the ball. They've played in different ways. There have been times that they've looked, you know, they have carried threat with them. This was not one of those games they set out to play in a certain way. It wasn't fun to watch, but they have got a base there, which to me is encouraging. What you want is that combination of being difficult to beat, difficult to play against, but offering something much more positive and productive in terms of up front, and we haven't seen that yet. I mean, you don't watch a game like today and think, oh my goodness, they're just, you know, they're just waiting to click. But when I saw them at Aston Villa, I did think that. And when I saw them against Liverpool, you think, okay, well, they're not very far away from being a really, really good team. They're adapting to a new squad. They're adapting to a new striker. And they're adapting to four competitions, which was something they weren't able to do a couple of years ago. They now do have that greater depth, but sort of dealing with it and finding a way to win is the challenge, and they're not there yet.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal have equalised against Man City, so that leaves Newcastle 4 points behind the top four, which I don't think is a terrible position to be in, but it's just 3 points behind fifth. So even after the start they've had, it's not like they're massively cut adrift. They're only one win behind fifth. Yes, they're only one win above the relegation zone, but the league is only just really taking shape. And yeah, I mean, Howe doesn't beat his former side either in the Premier League, does he? It's now seven times he's played Bournemouth, and home and away, and has failed to win as Newcastle manager. He did beat them once in the Carabao Cup, but other than that, I mean, yeah. So now it's on. We will have another podcast before Newcastle host Bradford City as they look to defend the Carabao Cup, the first time that they will start as defending trophy holders of anything since 1969-70. And so I'll give you the final word from Bournemouth, George.
I'm not coming back here again next season, Chris. That is my final word. I'm not coming back. I've dredged the positives out of this. I have seen worse here, and that's important to say, but I am just not doing this again. I don't know how I ended up doing this game, but I have, and I'm just not doing it again. That is my final word.
Toodaloo, everyone.
Goodbye.